going on, everybody? Welcome back to NBA Stories. My name is Nick Nasby. I'm your host. I'm here with Mark Tequila. Mark, happy new year. Welcome back, brother.
Happy new year, man. It's good to be back. Sorry for the long hiatus, but you know, we try and get back on the grind and bring you some more weekly content here coming up in the weeks to follow. We're going to try and make this a little more consistent moving forward.
Dude, life catches up, you know. It's so funny because at my old job, it was work from home, so I could just like stay home and at a certain point just be like, all right, let me get everything ready and do this. And now it's like I'm in the office just like grinding all day. So it takes a toll. But, you know, honestly, there's been so much happening in the league this year that like I just can't sit idly by and let these fucking casuals keep talking about it and having their shitty fucking takes like they always do. But I think the first thing, obviously the biggest news probably of the past 5 years, I mean, obviously, I don't think anybody can really dispute this, has been the Cam Reddish trade to the New York Knicks, who just keep winning this trade. Did you hear that? I think they got paid out like 1.8 today, or like 900,000 or something like that. Did you hear that they got paid for Solomon Hill?
Yeah, you knew that buyout was coming, but it's just absolutely ridiculous. Like, in general, what a one-sided deal. It's so hard to make sense.
I kind of wish they kept Solomon Hill. I kind of like Solomon, but I understand they don't have really any use for him. Like, where are they going to put him? But Cam Reddish is going to be one of the biggest steals this year of in the trade market. I get it. Sort of from a personnel perspective, I think a lot of the problems that the Hawks had with him is just that they didn't have a place to put him in the rotation because he didn't fit into their game plan entirely, right? Like, you have Trey running, and then you have Herter, and then at three you're going to have Gallinari, and then obviously four or five you have Collins and Capella. And so, like, now you have your second unit come in, right? And now your second unit's going to be the three is going to be DeAndre Hunter. And so, like, now he's running that, and DeAndre's got to get his burn. He's got to get his playing time when he's healthy. So where do you put Cam? Do you put him at four? Is he a little bit too big to play two? You know, can't play him at one. So where do you put Cam? So he started to like get into this third string, which to me is fucking crazy, because when you saw them giving him minutes, the second he gets out there, he put up 33 points the first time he played like a full game, you know, because of the protocols. Like, he was forced to play as a starter, and he put up 33, shot relatively efficiently. I think the biggest thing for me right now, and the biggest fear I had for him, because, you know, Rashad's big on Cam, I'm big on Cam, I think that there's a very good likelihood that he could be like a future all-star, and I know it sounds pretty hyperbolic to say that, you know, right now, but it's because we haven't seen him. And so being able for this kid to start shooting, he doesn't shoot a lot from three, but he's shooting 38% when he does shoot from three, which is, in my opinion, very, very good, especially for the minutes that he's playing. And, 12 points, a little bit up from before, 90% from the free throw line, you know, 2.5 boards and assists. He's a wing, you know, like, he's not going to do a lot in terms of facilitation, but I am really excited, dude. I was screaming like a little fucking schoolgirl yesterday at work when I got the alert. So, you know, I don't know. What do you think about that trade?
For me, I'm a huge fan of Cam Reddish. We've talked about this before on the podcast many times, and exactly what you said, with Rashad being a huge proponent of his as well. And I'm just shocked at like you said, I understand from a personnel standpoint that they are very clogged at the forward position. DeAndre Hunter, I believe, just came back from injury as well and is probably going to fill right into that starting lineup as soon as possible. I think at the moment they're playing like TLC, who, as a Sixers fan, I know is god-awful trash at the three spot. They have a couple other injuries. So I get it from that point. But to tell me that the most they could get in return for him was a conditional first-round pick.
And Kevin Knox,
Kevin Knox, who did you think that Kevin Knox had any sort of trade value left?
That blew me away. To be honest, who knows? You know, like, maybe the system failed him. Maybe he just fell out of favor in New York. Maybe he couldn't handle, you know, Madison Square Garden. Who knows, dude? I think he's kind of soft. I don't really think he has a position. And, like, obviously, you know, with Rashad's updated positions, like, yes, he more so does, but I think he just falls so flat in terms of everything he does. He doesn't have a role in New York. And so it kind of sucks for him now, because he's going to be going to Atlanta, which, like, he's the same general position as Cam Reddish, so he's going to get absolutely no burn down there. But, you know, maybe in a small ball set that the Hawks like to run, he can run like a four, get some more playing time that way. You know, I mean, he was a first-round pick for a reason. I saw it in that at that time. I didn't like it, but I saw it, and I was hopeful like every other Knicks fan, especially seeing the shit show that the team was back then, you know, and the fact that we gave up the chance at Michael Porter Jr. for him. But, you know, it really is a case of we just fucking bent him over, dude. It was really bad. Like, really, really bad.
No, it seriously was, and I think that this is an awesome, awesome situation for Cam Reddish to be in. I think he's closer to home. He's actually a Philadelphia kid, which was why, too, when the Ben Simmons Hawks rumors were floating around, it seems really like the Hawks are trying to clean house in a lot of regards. I wonder if there's more moves to come, because John Collins' name had been floated out there a lot, even though they just gave him a max contract. It seems like they're already like kind of regretting it and trying to move on from that. I don't know if the reports are true or not. But for Cam Reddish, this opens the door for who knows what. You're on a team right now with the Knicks who have been underachieving a little bit this year, but they're still by no means out of playoff contention. You now let him come in and maybe be that missing piece. He's comfortable with RJ Barrett. We know that. I think this couldn't be any better. I think Thibodeau is a guy that could work really well with a player like him. And as far as the Knicks wings go, they have been somewhat lacking in a player of Cam Reddish's talent this year. I think they're lacking almost a player who can kind of create his own shot and do the things that Cam Reddish can with the ball. All they really have in that regard has been Kemba, and he's been very inconsistent this year, as we've seen. RJ is continuing to develop player, right, but
he's going off the chain. He's, you know, and it's funny for me too to think about it. I mean, just consider this. Two out of the three of those Duke boys are on the Knicks now, and we know that Zion loves the Knicks. Oh, boy. Oh, boy, oh, boy. This is an interesting development. I mean, think about it. Like, I know it sounds crazy because it hasn't happened yet, but think about it from that, like, perspective of Zion Williamson festering away in New Orleans. You know, like, everyone's making fun of him. Like, he's just like he's getting trolled on Twitter every single day about his weight, about the injuries, all that kind of stuff. Ja Morant's blowing up, having like an MVP caliber season almost at this point. And like Zion's on the bench. Zion's in street clothes. Zion is delaying his rehab. Zion's, you know, pushing his return back another 3 weeks and then another 3 weeks. And like, what's the best way for him to start enjoying the game again? Go back to the team that he enjoyed playing with, RJ and fucking Cam, you know? And so like, think about it from that perspective. I think it's a great chance for us to get him, you know, at some point.
It would be enticing. I think we're talking about that much farther in the future, but at that point, like what we would need to see from now, it's first off, as a Knicks fan, I'd be jazzed right now and fucking excited out of my mind thinking about the possibilities of Cam Reddish and what his ceiling could be in the next year or two. You get Cam Reddish to all of a sudden elevate his game to another level, RJ to continue to develop, and I think you're starting to look towards a future of adding a player like Zion in 3 years to really, really accelerate this thing and moving away from the aging veteran signings that the Knicks have made over the past couple of years. Because I think that's the direction they want to go, is get these young guys and develop them, as opposed to going with like sort of that same formula they have been for a couple of years now.
When you say, I don't necessarily know if forever and always.
Yes.
It's literally the more or less, the Knicks go to. Yeah, I know. It's just like, and when you were saying that, I was like, wait, now that I think about it, they've kind of always fucking done this where it's like, oh no, New York's too big of a market for us to do a rebuild. Right. And then they get forced into a rebuild when Kristaps leaves. So now it's like a shitty team. We have absolutely no pieces. We signed the same position five times over in 2019 when we lost the sweepstakes for all of the players like KD and Kyrie. And we lost the Zion sweepstakes at that point too. So now we're just like signing whatever the fuck's left. And it's a bunch of like kind of small forward, power forward, you know, hybrid post guys. Okay, cool. Like, what do we do from here? You know, and luckily for us, one of them worked the fuck out. you know, if it wasn't for Julius, you know, the team would be definitely a few steps back right now. He's underperforming this year. You know, I think that he's having his issues with the fan base. I think he's starting to learn that in New York, it's like you live and die by success. And it's kind of unfortunate from that perspective, mm-hmm. just because, you know, I love Julius. I think we all kind of love Julius, and he's not playing to, you know, as good as he did last year. However, he's still playing at a very high level, but it's just not what we expected, you know? And so, and the team's not as good as they were.
Julius needs those players around him to take some of that pressure off. And that's, you know, really the last point I think I have on the Cam Reddish trade is, from a Knicks fan's perspective, such as yourself, I think this is something, the Cam Reddish move is so refreshing for the Knicks fan base, because it's that first time you're really seeing them go out and trade for a player with such a high ceiling, target him and say, this is a guy that we see as having such a high potential and could fit our system and we can continue to develop, as opposed to, they are usually the team that gives up a guy that goes on to become Cam Reddish and for Reggie Bullock or somebody like that, if you know what I'm saying. And that's no gripe on a guy like Reggie Bullock. It's just that's not a long-term move the way Cam Reddish
And the biggest part to what you're saying there is just he needs fucking help. He needs help, you know. Mm-hmm. And do for we sure. know what Cam Reddish is? No, man. He's been in gridlock in Atlanta for the last 2 years. There is a genuine chance that a slasher like Cam and a wing player like RJ could be the 1 and 2 scoring threats that a Julius Randle needs in order to thrive. You know, let's take a defender or two off of Julius. Let's get some attention off of him. Let's recognize, you know, other players on the offense and not have to double team Julius because he's doing everything like we've seen in the past. Like, let's do what we thought Kemba was going to do. He's done it to an extent, but, you know, not as much as we would have hoped, and definitely what RJ's doing in the last few games here. And let's have another guy being able to open up that offense for us, you know, and that's where the success is going to be seen. It's going to really come from taking the pressure off of Julius Randle, because it's unfortunately clear that I don't think that he can handle being a number one on a team. It's just not for him. But yeah, I mean, I wanted to touch on that first just because it made me almost cream my pants yesterday. And this was like the biggest news. The kid who sits next to me, Mike, he's like, you hear about Cam Reddish in the Knicks? He's a Knicks guy too. I'm like, what the fuck you just say? Oh my God, what? Like, I was like, oh my God, are you serious? Like, just freaking out. And I was like, what the fuck's wrong with you, dude? Like, like, who is that? And I'm just like, don't, you know, if you don't care or no, just shut up. Like, I'm not doing your negativity right now. This is the biggest day of my life. Now, meanwhile, I think there's, I want to touch on a couple of things here. I'm staying away from Kyrie. I don't want to talk about him. He's just annoying at this point. But there is another, specifically one guy for your team right now who's just like, not playing, which is interesting to me. Still just not playing.
Which one? Yeah. There's one on the court. There's one that's on the court that's not playing. But then there's one that's just literally not even on the court.
Do you know what's funny? I was listening to a Simmons pod, the Book of Basketball pod, where he was talking about the 2018 Rockets team with Daryl Morey. And it was from 2019, so it was before he left for Philly. But the way that man thinks, you know, you guys are actually, like, you're in good hands with somebody like that. You know,
oh, he's, for sure. I that's the one thing that keeps me, allows
he's
me
an
to
absolute
sleep
genius of the game. Game. Like, he knows, and it's just, he's like a money ball for basketball kind of guy, you know, which I think is just very interesting.
If it was up to Philly as a city, like the fan base, they would have traded Ben Simmons a week after the Hawks series, if it was possible. And even like, obviously that's exaggerated. The fan base needed him gone last offseason, but Morey is way too smart for that. And what's going to happen in the end is he'll end up getting a lot higher trade value than if he had dished him off right in that offseason. Last offseason, we would have got absolutely nothing. I still, if you're asking me what is this trade going to be, dude, I don't have the slightest idea, and I am so sick of looking at rumors about it because I just can't make sense of any of it. I really can't. And this whole Tobias Harris thing just throws an extra wrench into things, and that's why when I first heard the Cam Reddish news, I was a little disappointed because I'm a huge fan of his as well, and I wanted maybe him to be involved in a
He's
package.
Not big enough.
Yeah, that was the issue.
The slander on Ben Simmons, we are not, you know, innocent of this. Like, we have shit on this man's life every way to Sunday. But the truth of the matter is he still is an all-star caliber player, an all-NBA
for sure
caliber player. He is a 6'10 point guard. Who the fuck who is that, you know? He's a dual forward in every sense of the word. He just doesn't – he's scared to shoot. There's so many teams that could use him and win a championship right now, you know. Get him on the Bucks, could you imagine, right? Put him on even Miami. Could you imagine? There's so many teams that really aren't going to make a move for him, but they could. And if they did, they would be so much better for it. But Daryl Morey is smart, and he understands negotiation from an analytical perspective, which is important, you know, for this to work, because a lot of other guys, a lot of other GMs would probably take, you know, a package based on leverage and somebody be able to kind of like wheelhouse him into saying like, well, he's not going to play for you anyway, so we're just going to give you this. But the fact that the Kings have had De'Aaron and Tyrese Halliburton on the block for him, that one surprised me, because that sounded like that was a possibility to actually happen. Like, that seems like that is a fair trade, you know. And if you're going to give up Ben Simmons, I think were they also asking for Tobias though with that, or was it just Ben?
I don't think they have offered the two of them together. They're both on the table, and they haven't even spoken directly about the Kings are rumored to be interested in Ben Simmons, and the Kings have also, it's been leaked that Halliburton and De'Aaron Fox are not untouchable. But I think the Kings, like a lot of teams have been in this Ben Simmons situation, like you said, is they're trying to play that leverage ball and say that Ben Simmons isn't playing for you guys. You're trading us essentially an asset that doesn't exist at this point. We don't know what he's playing like, which is bullshit.
I think the bigger part to that card, though, is like he's never going to play for you anymore. He's going to – like that's the comeback for Morey. It's like he's not going to play us anymore, but he's going to play for you. And so we're not going to give him up. Yeah. We're going to just maintain him until somebody gives us something that we want for him. We'll hold him. We don't give a fuck.
Exactly.
You know, we're not going to waive his contract. We'll pay him whatever we have to, or whatever the case is, until we get something that works. You know, and I think that's where Morey is going with it. And that's a very fair point. It's like, yeah, he's not going to play for me. He's probably going to play for absolutely anybody else he gets traded to, but he's not going to play for us. So, but we're going to, you know, get something for him.
So the weird thing is that the Kings have been floating out Harrison Barnes' name in trade talks as if he is like a player with the same on the same level as Ben Simmons. It's quite bizarre in some of these reports. In fact, the one report I read was that the Sixers had come back and said that Domantas Sabonis, John Collins, and Harrison Barnes are not – those are the three names that were brought up in the report.
Well, I think
let's be
fair to the guy, though, because he's averaging 16 a game right now.
Barnes? Yeah. And I would so Barnes is a situation – this is where I think Tobias comes in, because all three of those players I am not opposed to adding. The difference is we have no place for any of those three players if Tobias Harris is still on the team. So now you're talking about – moving, as much as Philadelphia is disappointed in Tobias Harris, he adds a lot of trade value to a deal with Ben Simmons. Those are two players that we talked many times last year. They both should have been all-stars. And I think that adds an interesting element, because say you're looking at a deal with the Kings and you're talking Harrison Barnes and, say, De'Aaron Fox, or Harrison Barnes and Halliburton. I'm not sure the Kings would do the deal. I'm not sure the Kings have anyone else to add to the deal to make it worth Tobias and Ben Simmons. But in the same breath, It makes no sense to trade for the two of them, just Ben Simmons, and still have Tobias on your team. And that's the issue I think you're running into. Because I would take Sabonis in a heartbeat, but now you have to work a three-team trade with the Pacers because it just makes no logistical sense.
The interesting thing, first and foremost, is not really interesting. It's just that the Kings had probably the worst-run franchise outside of Minnesota. The fact that the Wolves are, like, as bad as they are just, like, makes me fucking crazy, you know, because it's like, you know, they're not terrible this year. They're the ninth seed. They're 20-22. Yeah, it's better than they've been in probably, what, 10 years since one of the Kevin Love years or something like that. But it's like, think about their team, right? Cat, D'Lo, Anthony Edwards is playing fantastic basketball. But last night I was watching them against the Grizzlies. Cat had three offensive fouls, two of them in the last 3 minutes of the game. Blew it. He blew the game. Like, Karl Anthony Towns blew the game against the Grizzlies. Like, obviously there's a lot that else that goes into, you know, winning and losing. So it's not obviously just his fault, but it had a lot to do with it. And it was just crazy from your star to think to – I'm thinking to myself, like, this is your guy, and he's making mistakes like this? And this is, like, how – you know, this is how the game is going to go for him? It was just an absolute, like – I don't know, man. It's, the Timberwolves are just a sad franchise who, by the way,
yeah,
also have pieces to move. Like, they've – the Kings
– dude, so many.
The Kings have needed – like, they've been rebuilding for, what, 15 years now? How long is that rebuild going since Peja was there and fucking Chris Webber?
At least.
Like, Kevin Martin was their, like, redemption, and he sucked, so they got rid of him, and then they've been rebuilding ever since. When's the last time they were even remotely good? You know, like, it's been pretty bad in Sacramento. I mean, they're you don't even have to ask yourself if they're good anymore. You could just assume. You could just assume they suck. That's bad, you know. The fact that I can say the Timberwolves suck and go to the conference standings, they're ninth, and be like genuinely surprised, because I usually can just make that claim without having to fact check myself. Like, that's a problem, you know. That's a problem from the front office level. That's a problem from the ownership level. I don't know if it's still the Maloof brothers, but like, there's an issue in Sacramento right now, and there has been. First of all, they shouldn't have a fucking team. Like, why? What is in that city? Why are you still there? Go to Seattle.
Dude, they got
go to Seattle. They want a fucking team so bad. Be the Sonics.
That's
so dude, bad.
That's something I want to touch on that, because I think there's two cities that really need basketball right now. And as much as I would say Sacramento doesn't deserve a team, which they don't, and they should move.
Everybody, there's a Warriors
even
fan.
Even more than
dude.
That.
Like, what the fuck are you – like, don't lie to yourself if you live in Northern California. Are you a Kings fan or are you a Warriors fan? Let's get real. You know, they're like 2 hours away from each other.
I completely agree with that, but even more so than just than moving the Kings, the NBA should expand by two teams. You add a team back to Seattle, and Vegas needs a basketball team. Vegas, Las Vegas needs a basketball team. It is a basketball city. They would love it. Love it. They would eat it up. I think it would be so good for the game
of
basketball.
I agree with that, actually, 100%. I mean, every other league is expanding. The problem, and this is what we ran into in the late 90s, is that when you expand in basketball, because like the depth of talent is pretty significantly smaller than most other sports.
Good point.
In the late 90s, if you look at like Jordan's second run at second three-peat, the teams he was playing against were clearly just not as good, you know, as the first three. Like, think about who he had to beat in the first ones, like Magic and the Lakers, right? Then he had to go against the fucking like
Very
Rockets and the Timberwolves, or not the Blazers with Clyde and all of these great teams. He comes back, he's playing like the Sonics. Right, the Sonics with Gary Payton, Sean Kemp, and Detlef Schrempf. Not really the best team, right? The next, like, Hershey Hawkins, like, decent, but not the best team, right? The next time, and then he's got the Jazz back-to-back, which had Stockton Malone, great. But, like, in those days, you genuinely could have two stars and win championships. You know, that's not the case right now. But if you add two whole teams, you're going to take 12 players, 24 players, up to 30, you know, off of teams, and you have to actually take some talent off of some of these teams. You can't just like take their shittiest players and expect it to be competitive, just like they do in hockey, right? So that's another issue we run into, you know, supplemental drafts, you have all that kind of stuff going on. So movement works better in the NBA than expansion does, notoriously. 30 teams, I think, is good enough. I think it can't get any bigger than that or else we run into problems. But, like, ultimately, yeah, if you're going to add one, it's going to be Vegas, I would say. I don't think that they're going to expand a team to Seattle. I think they're going to move a team to Seattle. I think any smart owner – if you're living in the fucking bayou or you're living in the capital city of California that no one gives a shit about, you should be considering the fact that in the Pacific Northwest, there is a city that is desperately craving an NBA team, their NBA team, the team that they loved for decades and you just ripped away from them, took it to the middle of the country so that you could watch them have like 35% capacity arenas now. How pissed off would you be as a Sonics fan watching the Thunder right now? Just like sucking a fat one. No one's in the stands. The quietest arena in the league. It used to be great, you know, the first few years because everybody there was excited. It's their first pro sports team. Cool. But now it's just like you have a decent team. They're not good, but they got a lot of fun guys on the team. And you just don't go. No one goes. You got nothing else to do and you still don't go, you know?
That was a horrible move. It was a horrible move. I mean, it reminds you of – I will forever say that the worst relocation I've ever seen in sports was just a couple of years ago when they decided to move two football teams
Chargers
to L.A., the worst football city.
The Chargers were – It was a disgrace. A fucking abomination, the fact that they did that.
Go watch, wait till you watch the Monday night playoff game this week. The Cardinals, the Arizona Cardinals playing at – the LA Rams, it will be a Cardinals home game, as
LA
always.
LA doesn't give a fuck.
Not about football.
LA might have cared if it was the Raiders coming back. The Raiders were pretty, like, they had the ghetto. They had, like, the hood, that South Central fucking vibe, you know? That's why Oakland worked for them.
Yeah.
Definitely LA worked for them when they were there. And the Raiders are just cool, you know? Like, the Rams are like, eh, they're pretty cool. They're like Eric Dickerson and, you know, Marshall Faulk and whatever the case is. But, like, are they really that exciting? Their best receiver is, like, White, no offense, but, like, you know, he's clearly like a possession guy. I just think, yeah, I mean, there's relocation of sports teams are obviously done for a financial reason every time, 100% of the time, without fail.
Yeah.
And the Seattle one really fucked over an entire fan base that just really, really loved the team. Loved them, you know. Like, the Sonics fans were the best fans. They were flooding into KeyBank Arena without a decent team on the fucking roster. You know, Ray Allen, Rashard Lewis, like, that's all you got, and you're going to maybe get a 7 seed. Doesn't matter. Sell out, you know. And that's how they are for all their sports. So it's like, dude, get them back. I think, you know, there's a couple – it's funny because a couple years ago – we would have had the same conversation about moving a team the fuck out of Memphis. Like, why are you in Memphis? Like, that city sucks. No offense, guys, for Memphis, but it sucks there. I remember flying in. I had my old job. I had an account in Memphis, and I was flying in to do a training with him. And I fly into the airport. I'm like, what the fuck is this airport? This is like a local airport. Isn't this like a major city with like a professional sports teams and like a worldwide impact and shit like that and like FedEx and all that stuff? Like, no, it's like a shitty little municipal airport. I'm like, what is this?
Nah,
this is insane. I've never seen it. And like this, like
it ain't Nashville.
It's definitely not Nashville. It used to be bigger. You know, it's like crazy how the times have changed. But I used to say that the Grizzlies make no sense in that city. And it's crazy to say now just how much one player – and, like, there's a lot of talent on the team, so you can't just give it to him. But one player has taken this team to the fucking stratosphere, make them one of the biggest threats, in my opinion, in the West, probably a dark horse in the West, to be honest. You know, they could take out anybody right now, I think. And to be completely frank, probably the most exciting team, you know, like on fucking paper – if my team's playing the Grizzlies, I'm watching that game. Just like I watched the Hornets. Yeah. I fucking love the Hornets, you know?
And I would put we'll touch on them too, but I would put the Bulls in that category right now too. Those are like the three teams that are like must watch.
I think the Grizzlies, even though they're much better than the Hornets, like I feel like the Grizzlies and the Hornets are like similar, just in their like entertainment factor, because like LaMelo and Ja, like they're kind of like similar. But dude, I was watching them last night. I put the block against the Lakers. I put that as my banner on Twitter. That was the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen somebody jump that high. I've never seen him jump that high. I've seen him jump over people, and I've still never seen him jump that high. The kid, he's the best athlete in the NBA. I'm going to say it. It's a bold claim. I don't give a shit. He's the best athlete in the NBA. He jumps. He has to have like a 47-inch vertical, maybe 50. Like he fucking flies. At 6'2", maybe, like a buck 70, buck 80. Like he's a skinny, skinny guy. He knows exactly where to go with the ball too, and that's what blows me away. He's Derrick Rose. He's so much more Derrick Rose than he is Russell Westbrook.
That's the comparison, dude. I'm so sick of hearing Russ because
especially now, bro.
I completely agree. It is
especially now.
It is prime. He is the closest comparison is prime Derrick Rose. I couldn't agree more. And you know what? I've been becoming more and more comfortable with this take over the past couple of weeks because since we've been doing this podcast, we've both been massive, massive Ja Morant fans. Same, this is another Rashad guy that we've talked about over and over and over again. And we've been on that. Ja is very well, might end up being a better player than Zion train for over a year now. And at this point, I think the entire world has like clearly flipped over to that side with us. I am now at the point where I am comfortable saying, I think at some point in his career, Ja Morant will be the best player in the NBA.
I think there's a
chance. I'm comfortable with that point.
I mean, he's only 21.
The one I would like waver with that I don't know where his career trajectory will go and how it'll impact it is Luka. Yes, that's the only other guy.
To be honest, I think Luka Giannis will always be better than him, to be honest.
Giannis will be the best player in the NBA for a long time, but at some point he's going to fall off the way LeBron is falling off, but the way that LeBron like passed the torch
or to any
him,
other player ever.
When Giannis drops that, it will be time for Ja Morant and Luka, and those are the two. And I think there'll be a year where Ja Morant is
we have to throw Zion back in the ring, dude. Like people really give him a lot of slander, and because no one watched the fucking Pelicans last year. No one has league pass. They're never on national television. Even when he was on the team, they had like five games on ESPN, like three games on TNT. There wasn't a lot of Zion going around, especially because he got hurt eventually. But when I watched him, because I did have league pass, the guy's a fucking tank still, you know. But let's just jump right to it, because Rashad called this shit well before the draft, you know. And like this is the kind of thing, because like he gets a lot of shit for the Luka thing. Like all of the trolls, like the Rashad trolls on Twitter, they always just go right back to the Luka thing, because that was like his one really bad miss. Like we all fucking miss, right? I've missed 1,000 times. He called Ja Morant being the best player in this draft in 2018 before the draft. They called him fucking nuts, you know? And now like everybody's saying it. Everybody's saying it.
Hell yeah.
You know, until Zion gets back, and who knows? Maybe Zion will come back and just be meteoric and we'll be like, oh, never mind. We all take it back. I don't think that's going to happen, though. I think, and I've been saying it since the draft, a 22-year-old, 21-year-old, whatever, who walks like an eighth grader, who's 300 pounds at 6'7", who jumps like 45 inches but puts all of the torque in his lower extremities, that's probably not a sustainable NBA player. That might work in the NFL as a tight end. That doesn't work in the NBA when you have to switch direction so consistently, when you have to leave your feet so regularly, when you have to, you know, shuffle and do all the kind of things that you have to do in the NBA and use your legs to get position. If you start to do those kind of things and not take care of your body and not eat right and still think you're 17 and do all the shit you used to do when you were 17 because you're not getting paid to play basketball yet, you know, over the table, but but you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the Zion problem. And I truly, genuinely, you know, and honestly hope that it doesn't turn into more of that. I really, really do, because that would be bad. You know, that would really, really suck if he becomes a Greg Oden. Really bad, you know? He's already better career-wise than Craig, but there's there's been so many cases of the obvious, and I'm doing air quotes right now, the obvious number one going up against the obvious quote unquote number two, and that number two being much better than him. Kevin Durant, best example.
Yeah.
You know, so it's,
that's why I think we can both agree that we do not want to see a situation where it's that massive of a discrepancy. And I think sometimes when a player that's struggling with injuries or what various other factors is seeing that player drafted right behind them have the astronomical success that Kevin Durant had, it can feed into that disappointment and things going south really quickly. No one wants to see that for Zion. I think at this point, I'm still taking Ja Morant for the rest of his career, but I would love nothing more than to see Zion be right there with him, be a multiple-time All-Star, which I still think is very possible. At this point, the best thing for him is moving to a new city more than anything. He needs a new environment, man. We talk about that organization all the time, and besides Willie Green, they don't got much going for him right now.
It's just a train wreck, and it's been a train wreck. The problem with sports franchises is that there's a lot of unserious teams. Like, they're just not – they don't care, you know.
It's so true,
and
man.
It's got so much to do with, like, the media and the presence of the team in the city and, you know, do people give a shit? Are they going to be there? Is a team ever good? Have they ever competed? Dude. You know, and all signs point to fuck no in New Orleans, right? The Saints have the heart of the city. No one gives a fuck about the Pelicans at the Smoothie King Arena. The least intimidating name of an arena, the least intimidating name of a team, right? They lose their best player ever in Anthony Davis. Send him over to L.A. to walk in street clothes on the sidelines, you know? Like, they have to watch that happen. They get the number one pick in Zion Williamson. Now he's on the fucking bench all the time. And he clearly doesn't want to be there anymore. I mean, not clearly, but, like, you can say it all you want, but, like, if I was an NBA player, at some point I'm going to be realistic and say, I don't want to fucking live in New Orleans. New Orleans is to go when you're 21 and trying to get fucked up with your boys. It's not to go to live, you know, eat gumbo and shit. Like, it's just not – it's not an NBA city. And it's it didn't work as the Hornets. So, like, why keep it? Right, move the city, move the team. No one there will give a fuck. Not a single person will care.
Dude, this is the problem that it's not even just the NBA problem. This is a big part of the lockout going on in baseball right now. Is two teams in particular, the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Baltimore Orioles, both of which are football towns, have their organizations have zero interest in getting better, and it's to the point where they're trying to look into ways to force them to try and become better because they're not willing to pay any free agents. They're paying people bottom of the barrel that don't even deserve what they're getting to go put a product on the field. And their farm systems have no talent because they don't have assets to trade for farm. It's the same thing that's going on with a team like the Pelicans. And at some point you end up in this cycle where it's like you have, from the very top, an organizational issue where no one is looking to improve or get better whatsoever. It's really a tough thing to fix. I mean, the baseball has had a lot of players get pushed out of the sport because teams like the Orioles and Pirates that don't give a fuck aren't willing to pay players that deserve to be in the sport what they deserve.
That's why I feel like that has a lot to do with the lack of a salary cap in baseball because you can literally just field a team of nine studs. It's turn-based, you know what I mean? So it's like you're not getting in the way of anybody else if you are cranking. In the NBA, it's not really like that. You know, you can't just like throw a bunch of players together and say, all right, here we go. Now we have a fucking team. Look at the Lakers right now. Look at the fucking Lakers right now. They're atrocious. LeBron's playing fucking great, as usual, 37 years old. It's the craziest shit I've ever seen in my life. And yet, the team still sucks. And when I say sucks, like, you know what I mean. Like, they're like the seventh seed. They're not a serious threat in the West. They're getting overtaken, beaten by significantly inferior rosters consistently. When are we going to start talking about Frank Vogel, by the way? When are we going to start talking about, like, Frank Vogel not being a good coach and just having, like, the best player in the world? Is that a conversation that people are ready to have yet? Because it's like here and here, when I thought about it this way too, we talk about the GOATs, right? Let's just go down a timeline. Bill Russell had Red Auerbach, one of the greatest coaches ever, probably, you know, considered to be the greatest coach of all time. Let's fast forward to the 80s, because the 70s were weird. Celtics, Casey Jones, one of the best coaches of all time. Lakers, Pat Riley, one of the best coaches of all time. Magic and Bird, they both had that guy, right? They both won a bunch of championships. John Daly, or Chuck Daly, sorry, not John Daly. for the Pistons, you know, two championships with those guys. And then we go to the Phil Jackson era. Would Michael Jordan be what he was without Phil Jackson? 100% no. Fuck no. We know that because he had Doug Collins before that, right? He wasn't successful until he got a great coach. Then we go to Kobe and Shaq, still Phil Jackson. Then we go to Tim Duncan, Greg Popovich, right? Who the fuck has LeBron had? The one time he's had a great coach, he won two championships.
And that guy deserves more credit than
– He's a great coach. No, Spoelstra, he's going to be a legend by the end of it.
Yes.
100%.
And I think the trajectory of LeBron's career has proven that. Meaning, like, when he went to – what he had to deal with in Cleveland, what was it? Who was the coach that
first year? It was Mike Brown.
Griffin? Who was that? Who was the – or, sorry, not his first year in Cleveland. The second stint in
Cleveland. Oh, it was Blatt. It was David Blatt.
Oh, no, Blatt. Yeah. I think all the coaches he's had to deal with, LeBron's, since Spoelstra, have proven how much of a stable, great coach he really was. We all know Tyronn Lue was somewhat of a fluke, the same way that Vogel was. Spoelstra deserves that credit more so, also with what he's done since LeBron left in his own right. He's been
but
a great
coach. I think, you know, going back to the LeBron side of this, it just shows how difficult it is to have such a phenomenal career, such a flawless 6-for-6 career, because organizations let you down. Routinely, consistently. Yeah. I mean, who has been let down more by organizations than LeBron James? Jesus Christ. You know what I mean? Who could you possibly put in that equation more than him? He's been on teams that he's had to carry to finals. He's been on teams that he has carried to finals. 07, Cleveland. You know, we all look at his misgivings, like the 2011 finals. We all look at the fact that he lost to, like, you know, Dirk Nowitzki and a bunch of 41-year-olds, but ultimately, at the end of the day, he has succeeded where success was possible, and he has succeeded where it didn't seem very possible. You know, so I think there's got to be a lot of love given to LeBron at the end of his career, because, like, goddamn, he's still averaging 27 a game. He's 37 years old.
Dude,
are you fucking kidding?
Man, I was looking at his numbers the other night. And I couldn't believe it. I saw, like, one of those MVP graphics that had, like, the six players right now that are in the hunt. And I could not believe his scoring average. I'm like, dude, this guy is still putting up fucking numbers right now. He's averaging more
than
30.
Do you even remember his first year in the league? Were you even old enough to remember that? Think about that. That's what's crazy about this. Like, I was a child, right? I had just gotten, like, a PS2 for the first time. He was on my first NBA Live game that I got as a rookie. He had a 68 overall. I remember that. And that's how long he's been in the league, you know? And he has never not been one of the top five players in the league since his rookie season. You know, he's gonna absolutely smash the scoring record. I don't know why anybody thinks otherwise. Like, he's going to fucking demolish it. And it's just – you know, and even with the last 2 years, he's been hurt. He was hurt last year. The last, you know, couple of seasons before that, he had the issues were with just, like, the amount of games that we were playing and the craziness of those games and things like that. But, like, he's just – we're never going to see this again, you know. So I hate how much grief he gets. Now it's, like, the haters and the fucking conservatives, you know. So, like, they both throw shit at him. My favorite joke that they made, or not even a joke, like, it's clear that they're so out of touch with basketball because they're like, I'd rather have Enes Kanter-Freedom on my team than LeBron James. I'm like, you're retarded. Are you stupid? Like, are you fucking – like, you can't be serious, or you've never watched a game of basketball before. He's an absolute liability. Like, on both sides of the ball. You're the stupidest shit I've ever heard in my life. You know, but it's like, yeah, dude, LeBron is currently being let down by his teammates. Like, let's talk about Russell Westbrook for a second. it's getting worse. How could it get worse? It was already pretty bad. How the fuck did it get worse? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it got fucking way worse for like what he's doing. His averages are down below 20. I think we anticipated that, right, going into this. Still 8-8, but it's all a lot of stat padding. You know, and just like, let's talk about his shooting. 28%, 29% from field, 44% from the floor, down to 65% from the free throw line. He was an 85% free throw shooter in Oklahoma City.
He's also,
what the fuck happened?
He's benefiting people. There's been a narrative across the NBA world, like over the past month, and really since Anthony Davis got injured, that like Russell Westbrook has really stepped up his game. Just wait till AD comes back, and you'll see how much of a problem it was again. I think he's kind of gotten some of the issues that we saw in the beginning of the year when all three of them were on the court, and how much of a, like, no one really knew who's going to have the ball, and it was a ball hog situation. That's kind of gotten masked since Anthony Davis got injured and Russ has been able to fit in a little more. Once AD comes back, all those problems are going to reappear. I guarantee. And it's not even an Anthony Davis problem. It's a Russell Westbrook problem that gets masked when he's not on the court.
Well, I think it's an organizational problem for continuously thinking that they could just throw a bunch of fucking stars on the court and think it's going to work. Russell Westbrook doesn't play well with anybody. He's not an asset to a team anymore. He wasn't an asset since KD's last year in Oklahoma City, when he was clearly a Robin and played the part. They were clearly like a one and a two, and very distinct one and two. The problem that happened is that Russell Westbrook got his own team, just like James Harden did. The difference is James Harden's better. It's like Westbrook got his own team, and now look what happens. Now he's an alpha. He always kind of has been, but he's lost the bounce. He's having a hard time getting up like he used to. He's lost the bounce. The jump shot's just not there. You know, this is the time of career. This is the point of guys' careers where they start to develop like an offensive game that's more ground centric for point guards. You know, and it's tough to do it. It is tough to do it, but the greats do it, and I don't think he's ever going to fucking get that. Like, he's just not, you know. And he's going to do – you know what's going to happen? He's going to go down – it's funny because he's on the same team as this guy now. He's going to go down the path of Carmelo Anthony, and he's going to – he's basically going to be forcing up a bunch of shots until he's, like, basically told that he can't fucking play basketball anymore.
It's gonna be a sad ending for him. That no matter how they slice it, because I think at some point LeBron will just get sick of it, and I think it'll be pretty quickly he's gonna move on from that. The Lakers, really, the way I envision their playoff run going is they're gonna need Malik Monk to like take a last second buzzer beater three to save them a game in a series, somebody like that. Because I still like Malik Monk. I think that was the one move that they made that was positive. He's going to have to hit like a buzzer beater three to steal a game in order for them to win a playoff series. Because at this point, I don't see them finishing in the top half of the West. It's way too loaded. Like, you can't tell me the Grizzlies have smacked them every time they've played, I believe. You can't tell me that the Lakers have any shot finishing ahead of the Grizzlies in the standings. And in a playoff series, I would take the Grizzlies 10 times out of 10.
For a spot. The Grizzlies are the fourth best team in the West, and I would say probably the fifth or the sixth best team. I mean, they're top seven in the league right now. They're 30-14. I mean, they have the fourth best record. You know, tied for the fourth best record in the league right now with the Jazz and the Jazz. And so, like, dude, there's a lot of talent on that team. You know, I think TJ is doing really well too. Like, he's got them playing really fluid, and I think the players love him. I think he's a really good players coach. We say this every fucking year, right? The West is stacked. The East is also doing pretty well, though. That's the big difference. The East is the best iteration of the East we've seen in a long time, at least now.
Definitely the deepest.
Well, because, I mean, look at this. We got 10 seeds right now. The Wizards were one of the best teams in the league just like a month ago, and now they're in ninth at 22-20. You know, like they're tied for eighth, basically. So it's like, that's and with the Raptors, by the way, who I don't think anybody saw that shit coming. You know, like, it's
Dude, Fred,
I know.
Let's give some respect to, that guy, to the boy.
You know who called him, by the way? Fucking Shad called his ass, too. He calls all these mid-majors guys, dude. It's crazy. He's like, he's, you know, awesome. 22.
He is awesome.
22, 6.5, 5 boards. You know, he's running this offense. I don't think anybody is surprised by how good he is. If he's not an all-star this year, it's a fucking shame. He deserves it.
I think it was – it's easy to see, too. Like, that was – that sometimes, and this is what I think you'll see in the Hawks organization throughout the rest of this year, sometimes when an organization moves on from somebody that you can't really, like, you're trying to figure out what was going on, the story unfolds throughout the rest of the season. Kyle Lowry, it was time for him to get the fuck out of there, and they knew that it's time for Fred VanVleet to take over. We need to – yeah, exactly. We need to just give this guy the reins. I think to some extent somebody is going to pop off in that Hawks organization now, and you're just going to see like that they had no room for Cam Reddish. Like those kind of things just kind of unfold as the season goes.
And, I think the other part to this that's been like a huge benefit for everybody is that – Pascal Siakam is not a number one, and we knew it, you know? Like, he worked really well because Kawhi was there. Like, he won a championship because Kawhi was there. And, most improved, again, Kawhi really helped him do that. And I think a big aspect to his growth right now is the fact that there's not a lot of pressure on him to ball out, you know, because Van Vliet takes the reins. It doesn't give a fuck, you know? Like, he takes the reins, doesn't care, and does it anyway, and he's a fucking killer. And so, you know, you have those two. I mean, we all forget about Gary Trent Jr., but if you were watching the bubble games, you don't forget about Gary Trent Jr., and he's averaging about 60 right
now.
He's
a good player, man.
I mean, he was crushing in the bubble, if you remember. Like, he was crushing in the bubble.
Yeah.
And the other one, obviously, is the rookie. Dude, like, Scottie Barnes, man. I think we got to talk about a couple rookies here if we're going to bring him up, because right now he's averaging about 15 a game. He's just turned 20 in August. 15 a game, 8 boards, 3.5 assists. You know, clearly playing like a dual forward position right now. They use him as like a hybrid post on occasion just because he's got some great size. Like 6'9", I think, is a understatement. Like, he plays much larger because he's got this huge wingspan, and he really has added so much to this team. So much. It's been really impressive, you know,
for sure. And as far as those other rookies, man, I think it's pretty clear right now who the rookie of the year is. I don't really see anyone taking it from Mobley.
I thought you were talking about Quentin Grimes. You're not talking about Quentin Grimes?
You give it to Grimes.
Dude, okay, so this, it's funny, you know, because last year we didn't think that the rookies were going to be good, and they surprised us, right? Anthony Edwards is playing high-level basketball. Wiseman's been injured, but, you know, we all know what he can do now from his limited action. LaMelo, do I even have to mention it? Fucking killer, you know what I mean? Like, all-star, almost guaranteed all-star this year. If he doesn't make it, it's insane, because like, it's not just that he's great, it's that he's also really popular. People like to watch him, you know, so like, there's that aspect too. But this year, we knew exactly what we were getting, and we're getting it from all of them. You know, like, we knew what we had. We knew that Kuminga, who, by the way, is on the fucking Warriors right now, is a killer, and he did a couple G League stints, but it's just because there's a lot of gridlock on that team. Then move up to Jalen Green. Is Jalen Green going to be a star if the team gets good? I don't know. Maybe. I know Kevin Porter Jr. probably is a high volume all star. You know what I mean? Do you know what that is? It's the Al Harrington All Star Award, where it's like, give you 25 on like the worst team in the league.
It's like the Michael Carter Williams Rookie of the Year.
It's like the Chandler Parsons.
That's what will piss me off if Cade Cunningham ends up by the end of the season accumulating enough stats to take over the Rookie of the Year.
The thing is, there's just no chance because the writers make the, you know, they vote for this stuff, and the writers love the story. And Cade Cunningham playing for the worst team in the league, averaging, you know, 15, 6, and 5 or something like that. Like, yeah, cool. You know, cool. That's a great stat line. Your team sucks dick. still, even though you're running the point guard. Your team still blows. And there's a couple pieces on that team. Now, if we go over to Cleveland, it's not that they are bad. I mean, you know, what's his name? Garland is like playing all-star caliber basketball. I think he warrants a fair amount of looks for an all-star bid, and he actually honestly might get it this year. And I don't know. I think Sexton's hurt, right? I don't know if he's.
Yeah, he's still hurt.
But like, and but think about that. They're 24-18 without Colin Sexton on the field, on the court. So like, Kevin Love is playing better than he has in a long time. I think he's just happy to be on a good team again. Unfortunately, they lost Ricky Rubio. They could have really used him, you know, moving forward. But I don't think they absolutely need him. And then you have, you know, Rondo's over there now to fill in for it. Obviously, Garland again's playing. He just turned 21 or 22. Or he's not, sorry, he turns 22 on the 26th. Like, he's 21 years old. You know, like, that's, he's a star. He's a star. And no one thought he would be a star. I didn't think he would be a star. Do you think he was going to be a star?
No, that, I thought that was Sexton's team. I've been shocked by what I've seen.
And it's funny because, like, they kept drafting the same guy. You know, Okoro was a miss. And I don't know why they thought that Okoro wasn't going to be a miss. He's not exactly a miss, you know. I mean, like, nine and four, two assists. Like, I just don't know what they were thinking with that pick, you know, because they had – there's so many people on the board at that point. Like, you even could have taken a shot. Like, Halliburton was on the board. I will never respect anybody who took anybody before Halliburton. I don't get it, and I won't get it, and I refuse to try to understand it because it's bullshit. But, like – you know, you look at this rookie list right now, and Evan Mobley is one of the leaders, if not, you know, the best player on the Cavaliers right now, who are a 24-18 Cavaliers team that surprised literally everybody. Zero people put them in the playoffs this year. Did anybody that you know think that the Cavaliers were going to be anything but a bottom dweller?
God, no. And they've been the best team against the spread all year long for betting
purposes. The last time we talked, I was still shitting on them. And you were like, you know they're like the fourth seed in the East. I'm like, shut the fuck up. And I go to it, and they're the fourth seed in the East.
Yeah.
And I say the same thing that I say every season. It's like, okay, well, that's the beginning of the season. Guess what? We're clearing into All-Star break, and they're still the fourth seed in the East. Yeah, and they're still playing the best basketball, you know, of any team, I would say, besides the Bulls in their division. You know, and I mean, the Bulls obviously are the best team in the division, in the conference, so like, you can't really go ahead of them. But in the Central Division, who really is better than the Cavs besides them? Give them a 5 seed. Watch what they do in the playoffs. It's going to be dangerous.
Yeah, I'd be real curious, because I mean, I'll tell you a team that's in serious trouble. And like, there's two teams that stick out as like the disappointments so far in the East. I think the Knicks have the chance to definitely, and they kind of already have somewhat climbed out of that a little bit and back into the picture. I think the Celtics, though, are in serious jeopardy.
They're brutalized.
I think they might have to trade Jaylen.
Well, they
Brown
put too many eggs in that tandem basket and then build enough around them. It's becoming like more and more clear as we go along, where it's like Jaylen Brown is very, very good, and like Jason Tatum's like a fucking, he's borderline superstar at this point. But like, who's
and they're,
around
they're,
him? You know?
Exactly, and they're doing Band-Aids every single season. They've just been going Band-Aid after Band-Aid. And I'm sorry, but Kemba Walker might as well just rebrand himself as the Band-Aid company.
Band-Aid from Brooklyn.
That's all he is.
Kemba Walker.
Yeah. Just put him in there if you don't want to give up on your core, but you want to give it one more shot and still not go anywhere.
I don't think that they hired the right guy. Their coach is just like, meh. Is it Udo? No.
Well, that whole situation was just bizarre. I don't like Stevens as the, what is he, president of, or is he the GM?
Yeah.
GM or president of basketball operations?
Up.
I forget what they call it.
They moved him up. I didn't really get it. I didn't think that he was like necessarily the best coach. It's funny to me though, because if you think about it, why did they hire Brad Stevens? Think about it for a second. Why did they hire Brad Stevens out of Butler?
To coach.
Well, I mean, he's a good coach, but he's a good coach for like decent players, right? He like makes a good team full of pieces. And so if you remember when they were like they were shitty before they had him, and then they got Brad Stevens, and then they had like they like competed against the LeBron Cavs with what fucking Avery Bradley, right? And Isaiah Thomas. And like really not that great of a team. Al Horford, you know, like they had all those pieces, and then they kind of just limboed, you know. And now they have like genuine star power, and I don't think that Brad knows what to do with it. I don't think he knew how to handle it. And they hire Udoka. Yeah. Like, why would I just don't understand why you would hire a brand new coach? I get it. He's from the Spurs umbrella. Like he was a Pop's assistant since 2012. Like I understand that. But why are you hiring him? Why are you hiring a first-time guy for a team like this where you are clearly not in a rebuild? I think first-timers are better for rebuild teams, in my opinion, you know, unless it's like star, and it's Steve Nash, you know. I don't know if he has the locker room. You know, I'm not in the locker room, so I don't really know how he handles his players. What I do know is that I'm not like threatened by the Celtics. Evan Fournier just dropped 41 points on him. That was embarrassing for them. I was embarrassed.
Yeah,
for them.
That game was wild.
Like I love the shit on the Celtics. Like I love that. The shit on them and their life. I fucking hate the Celtics, but I was embarrassed for them when they allowed that to happen. That was insane, inexcusable. I know that Fournier gets hot, you know, and he's a huge piece for us this year, and I'm really happy that we have him. But like, are you really gonna let him go off for 41 on your face? On your face? Like you're gonna have to put Marcus Smart on Fournier because you can't stop him. Like what?
Dude, also he might be the biggest problem on the entire team. How do they allow? I'm assuming you watched that entire Knicks Celtics game because I watched every minute of it, and I don't know how they don't call a timeout and say, Marcus, you are out there for defense. Yeah, stop launching. If you take one more shot that is contested, you are coming out of this game and not.
I know,
back.
But the problem with that dude is that he fucking hits those sometimes. Like he is about the most clutch player on the Celtics team. That team's not very clutch, granted, so it's not saying much. But who, you know, do you trust Jason Tatum to take the last shot? Honestly, do you trust him to take the last shot?
Do you, though?
Go with your gut.
I don't know. Do you trust him?
The best player on the team. Do you trust him to take the last shot? Do you trust Jalen? Do you trust Jalen Brown to take that last shot?
Definitely not Jalen Brown.
They have passed it off to Marcus Smart in crunch time. That game that the Knicks blew, where they beat him in I think overtime, but they blew it in regulation. Jalen Brown butchered a fucking three wide open, and then Marcus Smart splash. You know, he's got it in him. You got to give it to him. You know, like he's got the talent for sure.
Do you remember him in college?
Oklahoma State, dude, for sure. He was a huge name.
Dude, I thought he was good. Because remember when he flipped off the crowd in college?
He was a fucking problem.
The huge scene. Dude, I thought he was going to be I just thought he was going to be a very different player than he ended up being in the NBA. And I'm not, by no means am I saying he's been a disappointment because he's done some really good things. But I just thought he was going to be a very, very different player than what he's become. I don't even remember him being a good defender in college.
I don't remember him being this good, but it's just it's an example of somebody realizing that their skill set that they want to have isn't conducive to a paycheck and very success. True. You know, there's one side, right, where there's a player who his skill set isn't conducive to him even making the team, right? And so, like, they have to change it because of that. And then there's guys who realize that their skill set isn't conducive to them winning, right? Or, like, what they want to do isn't conducive to winning. And so they change it for that reason, you know? And that's a lot of what we're seeing in like your Chicago's right now, where a lot of guys are, you know, they're taking less shots. I mean, did we ever think – the best example of that Al Harrington fucking superstars in this generation – do you remember Al Harrington, by the way? Is this like going over your head?
Yeah. With the Warriors. The
Warriors, but like before that, if you probably don't remember this. He was on the fucking Atlanta Hawks post-Dikembe in the early 2000s when they were just literally the shittiest team in the league. They had like Mookie Blaylock and fucking Al Harrington. Yeah, you probably wouldn't remember it back then. I was a little kid at that point, but he was averaging like 20 a game, like for no reason, you know? Like it didn't make a difference because they sucked, you know? But like let's talk about Zach LaVine still at 25 a game on the best team in the East. Possibly, I mean, you can't really say they're best team in the league because of the Suns and the Warriors. But besides those two, maybe the best team in the league and, like, definitely, definitely in contention for a finals bid. For sure.
For sure.
And then, you know, DeMar, everyone's given DeMar, like, MVP nods. I hesitate to ever look at a guy who I've seen be weak on that many occasions as, like, an MVP look. But I mean, how do you really dispute it at this point for what he's been doing?
He's been pretty unbelievable. I just think they pushed all the right buttons, and it's really hard to do that in the NBA. And we've talked, how many teams have we talked about just in the last hour on this episode that can't figure out that right combination to push? And I'm shocked at how the Bulls have done it, but it just seems to work perfectly together what they have going on. These are like, their top four is as good as any in basketball right now. And I don't see – it's not like the Lakers where it doesn't make sense together. They have a top four that makes so much sense together. Yeah,
they're conducive.
So much.
They're very fluid together. And it's quite interesting to think about because they're none of them are that old. You know, like Vooch is 31, so, you know, he's probably the oldest on all of them. But
I think DeMar's
oldest. Yeah, DeMar's like 32.
He's
like 33. You know, Zach's 26. I know he's a year younger than me. And Lonzo is a fucking 23-year-old kid. Like, he has gotten so much shit for being pretty. He's gotten so much shit. Think about this. For being pretty good, like, kind of always. Like he's never been bad, and like every
his most disappointing year was like his
rookie and second season in LA because he's like a home, right? Like get him out of LA, and he's gonna thrive, and we saw that happen. You know, he goes like his free throws were atrocious. Remember he was shooting like sub 50, and everyone's talking shit about it, and like then he goes to New Orleans, and it's like, well, he's actually a lot better now, but now he's in fuck New Orleans, so like, you know, get him the fuck out of here because this sucks, but. Now he's in a team where we know what he's going to give you, right? He's not going to give you 20 a game. He's not going to be your number one threat on offense, but he is going to be probably the best facilitator that you're going to have on your team, you know, bar none. I don't know any other guy who's going to play point guard, you know, much better than he does. And also, let's talk about the fact that he's now, you know, shooting 42% from three on 7 3 attempts a game. So, you know what I mean? Like, he is basically getting all of his points from the three. He's shooting many more threes and twos. He's shooting 11 shots a game, and seven of them are threes. Seven and a half are threes. So, you know, good for him, man. He found his fucking niche. I'm so happy for Lonzo. Maybe LeVar will let him, you know, come inside at Thanksgiving now.
Nah, he deserves it. Ooh, I see Josh Richardson getting chippy with his old team. Good riddance, Josh Richardson. Yeah, Sixers beating the Celtics right now, 29-12.
It's okay. So let's finish here. Let's give our midseason awards. Let's do that. I want to hear what you have to say about it. Just the big ones. Let's just do the big two. Let's do rookie and MVP. Who is your MVP right now? As it stands right now, if you were to have to pick it today, who is your MVP?
I will say it's done a huge 180 since the last time we spoke because it's absolutely not Steph Curry. And that was who I had preseason.
Until like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, really until 2 weeks ago. And since Draymond got hurt. And I don't know if you got a chance to watch that video I sent you, but it's – we are learning how goddamn important Draymond Green is to Steph Curry's success. And I watched this video of JJ Redick, who has a really good podcast if anyone out there hasn't listened to it, talking about the success that Draymond and Curry have had this season with their screen and rolls they've been running. And it's in the video, they show the same exact play that Curry and Draymond have been running over and over and over and over again this year. And it's literally just Draymond getting the ball on a pass from Curry and then immediately passing it back to him and setting a screen. And that's how Curry gets off the majority of his three-pointers. Without Draymond lately, and I've watched a couple of their games in the past like five that he's been struggling so bad, it doesn't seem like he can even get a three-pointer off clean. So I'm not taking him for MVP anymore. It's a tight race right now. I want to say Ja Morant because that's our fucking dog. And Embiid has also been on fire. But right now I'm going with my boy Giannis. I think Giannis so far this season has been under the radar just better than any other player. He has been consistently unbelievable.
I mean, he's just the best player in the league, right? Like, it's unfortunate because I do also believe, though, that this might be the most wide-open MVP race ever, at least at this point. Like, we said that last year, but
it's definitely the deepest. Yeah, it's the deepest.
What I was going to say is, like, we said that last year, but I think it was pretty much Jokic from the cut, just because, like, the triple-double almost, you know, as a center from the beginning, like, oh, my God. Like, we've seen him do this, but before that, we've never seen anybody do this, and we've never seen him do this like this, you know? So, like, that's the MVP, right? But now it's like he's not a back-to-back. I mean, I don't know. You got kind of have to throw a flyer at him, to be honest. Like, he's 25 and a half, 14 and 7 right now. Like, what the fuck, dude? That is I think Malone said he's one of the most disrespected reigning MVPs. In terms of attention, it has a lot to do with the team kind of sucking, not sucking, but just not being that good, you know? So I think that's going to really take a lot away from him getting another look, but it's really a case. I think you got to throw Ja in there in the mix. He's not going to get it just because he's not there yet. You know, the fact that like Luka isn't getting more looks, it's kind of just, noteworthy. Just because I know that, I don't know.
He's been so
injured, but like the problem is he hasn't been on the court, but it's also when he's on the court, he's so fucking good, dude. He's only missed like 8 or 9 games, but his scoring's down, his rebounding's down, his assists are about average. His rebounding's a little bit down, but like, it's interesting how he's regressed, you know? It's like, wow, he's actually like playing a lot worse than usual. 31% from three. 71% from the free throw line. Like, it's very interesting in that regard. Trae Young's better than him right now. Like, a lot better than him.
We probably got to throw KD in this.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, just because it's like last night you saw how important he was to that team. I was watching that shit, you know. My God, they got cranked by the Thunder, you know. They sat him fourth game in 5 nights. I get it. You know, sit your star fourth game in 5 nights. Like, that's the kind of shit. That's the reason why Isaiah Thomas only played for like 11 years and like Larry Bird's back blew out in his 9th season. You know, it's like they fucking just played all the time. It's just not, it's not feasible for longevity. But, KD is at damn near 30 a game again. You know, greatest scorer ever. 6 assists, basically running the offense. Harden has been pretty inconsistent, in my opinion. So he's been kind of covering the slack. I think Harden's definitely taken a backseat intentionally, which is pretty cool. But, yeah, I like that. I think that's a good call. Giannis is pretty much, the story right now, just like the resurgence. If Steph has a good second half, he takes it, though.
Steph is like far and away the betting favorite right now. I have watched a lot of him recently and I've just been scared by what I've seen. He's a streaky player. His play style is going to be streaky. So it's kind of expected for him to go through a rut like this, but I've been like disappointed by his play lately, and that's why I'm like coming into this episode with a sour taste.
But it's also
in my
like
mouth.
You know the voters
also just watched Giannis.
You know the voters like really want to vote for him. You know what I mean? Like they really so badly want to vote for him, and like it's difficult to do so just because he's just not really
doing that good. And Giannis just won two straight. Then they give one to Jokic, and it's like, are they going to want to go right back to Giannis? You start to think that way.
But you can also make the case that he should have won it last year too. Because like
sure.
he hasn't,
that's the
there
only
was
reason
no
he
step
didn't.
Off. They just couldn't give back to back to backs to the same guy, even though he was quite possibly the back to back to back guy. You know,
I think last year is quite exactly the opposite of this year for an MVP race, because last year Jokic was the easy pick from start to finish, as we talked about, but it was also every player that could have given him a run ended up getting injured throughout the year. This year, knock on wood, there's like 8 MVP candidates that have all played plenty of games and have stayed healthy enough so far that they're right in the mix. And could any of the 8 could take it. I think it goes about that deep. Last year, it was like at this point in the season, there were only 3 guys that had played enough games to even have
right.
a shot.
I mean, Joel would have won it if he was healthy all season, in my opinion.
For sure.
You know,
for sure.
It just made more sense for him. He was just a fucking absolute beast.
He's going to have that problem for forever.
I worry about him, man. Like, they list
yeah,
him at
I worry about
feet.
Him
you,
ever
like, are you
one.
Kidding me? Listing that man at 7 feet flat. He's like 7'2.5", maybe. Like, maybe taller. He's fucking massive. You know, there's no chance that that guy can stay. No offense to him, like, and it sucks to say it. There's just no chance he can stay healthy at that size. You know, I mean, 7'2", 7'3", 280, you know, like they did a good job keeping him off the court when they did, and keeping him on a crunch, you know, in terms of minutes in the beginning. It's just going to take a toll, though. You know, there's no way around it. He's just going to take a toll eventually. You know, but he is definitely in the mix this year too. But I think we've said a lot. You know, I think we went pretty hardo on this one just because it's been a while. You think Evan Mobley for Rookie of the Year too, right? Yeah, I think we already talked about that. Yeah,
absolutely.
I think it's pretty obvious right now. Any last takes here before we wrap up?
Not at this exact moment. I would just say just a quick note. Welcome back, Klay Thompson. Yeah. That's my final statement. He's going to take a while to get back to the Klay that we know and love. But just to see him back on the court after what he's been through is just amazing for the game of basketball. And that's really all I got to say about that one. I think they're going to be a dangerous out in the playoffs once he comes back. I just hope to God that Andrew Wiggins knows his place.
Oh, he does, though.
Try to keep,
dude.
And doesn't try to keep being the shot taker that he's been all
year.
Dude,
but I'm just saying, like, I know you'd say he's chucking, but he's actually making shots, dude.
He's been good this
year,
but
I'm telling you, like 42% from 3, 49% from the field. I mean, you got to give him the shots because he kind of deserves it, right? Like, that's great fucking stat line. But, yeah, I agree, man. Welcome back, Klay. You know, cross our fingers. Hopefully it stays. But, you know, I think that's about it out of me. And we'll be back, hopefully. We'll try to run this back next week and talk about what we were wrong about.
For sure. I look forward to it.